There was a woman in our greater Ananda community a number of years ago who came down with stage 4 cancer. It wasn't detected until it was quite advanced. And she was relatively young, and this was not her life plan. She had a child she'd hoped to raise, and it was, many doctors wouldn't even treat her, which tells you how serious it was. But also in her own self, she was reluctant to enter into the allopathic medical world. She wanted to use other methods, including the power of prayer and her beseeching the gates of heaven. And she said to Swamiji that she was going to try to heal herself. And Swami's answer, I wasn't present, but this is what I was told. He just looked at her in his way, which it's very hard to not be truthful when he looks at you. He said, "Do you have the concentration and discipline to heal yourself?" "No, sir." That was her response. It was a very interesting way to answer her, because he didn't say, "Oh no, that would be foolish, you have to go to the doctors, you must do this," because the question was not whether could it be done, but the question is, can you do it? And very often in our understanding of the spiritual life and our prayer, and especially, I mean, this verse in the Bible, "Seek and ye shall find, knock and the door shall be opened, pray believing and the mountain will move." Swami, I believe it's in the Path, Swami tells the story that Master used to tell about a man whose view of the ocean was blocked by the hill outside his window. So he said to the window one night, you know, "Be gone!" And the next morning he came out and he said, and it was still there, and he said, "I knew you'd still be there." Which is just the opposite of praying, believing. There's a line in this reading, which is, "When the mind is concentrated in powerful one-pointed focus with the growing awareness of God's presence within, then..." Because it isn't just a question, and this is how people often seriously misread the spiritual path. Because it can be done, they think, therefore, I can do it. And they miss the little parts of it. There's the horrific story that's told in here about how Master could take the children of his school to a dangerous place, but he had the power to hold them, you know, with their concentration and discipline, whatever it might have been. That might have been one way to put it. He could exert the magnetism that allowed them to cross safely. But another teacher, well, he could do it, I can do it, it can be done. The way they describe it, one of the children slipped. And what causes us to slip? We tend to lose our discipline and concentration, isn't that so? So somehow or another, I mean, speaking just of, I was saying how Swami Kriyananda spoke to that woman in that way that was very difficult not to respond honestly to. There were many reasons why I enjoyed Swami's company. I'd say there were myriad reasons why I enjoyed his company. But one of them was it kept me wide awake. It was as if the vibration that he was emanating at all times, it just was hard to go to sleep. I don't mean physically sleeping, although that too. But it was hard to let your mind drop because the force of it was just constant like this. And so in that company, you can imagine those boys were also, they never wavered from what they were supposed to do. But the other teacher was just hoping it was true. And the example that I was saying of the woman who the cancer took her life. She went into an enormous allopathic treatment which prolonged her life. But in the end, the cancer took her life. That's often a situation, whether it's actually some kind of illness or life-threatening situation, that's often the time when we get all sort of wrapped up in trying to, now I'm really going to pray, and now God really needs to answer me. Let me find what the thought is that I need here. And I mean, this is a very subtle point, and now I find myself in it. I'm going to have to try to get through it. I've very often seen, especially when it's a desperate situation, that we feel like we're not showing proper faith in God if we don't believe that He can do it. And we forget that little part about attuning ourselves to what it is that He is willing to make happen in this world. I remember, there's two stories. I think this was a habit for many little children when your father used to shave by lathering up his face and then using a razor. One of my daddy times was always when he would shave, because he would be trapped there at the sink and I could talk to him and spend time with him, and we both enjoyed it. And it was in one of those circumstances that I asked him the question, being Jewish, as to why Jesus wasn't the Messiah. And I watched, you know, it's like we just assumed it, but how come, Daddy? And I watched him, you know, looking at himself in the mirror while he was shaving. I can still see him fumbling around for a good answer. And it was clear to me that he hadn't the foggiest idea. But I resolved at that point that he didn't know, and therefore I shouldn't ask him. Another friend of mine talked about, he asked his father, he was afraid, he was a young child, but he had an existential awareness of the possibility of death, and he was really afraid of death. And he said to his father, you know, I'm very afraid of death, what shall I do? And his father looked at his son and said, I can't help you with that. You know? So we come to these points in our lives where we realize that certain things that we want to have given to us, that we've been counting, a child, I was a devoted daughter to my father, and he was a very helpful guide to me in my early life. But you suddenly reach the point where you come to the edge and you see that what you want, that world that you want to have, that reality where Daddy's always wise and can answer every question, whatever it might be that you're looking for, we're always looking to carve out a little space where we'll be safe, aren't we? Where whatever it is that is our deepest fear, our deepest concern, that we'll be safe. I was raised very well. I want to give full credit to my parents for being good parents. But they weren't enlightened. And the questions that I really want to have answered, they didn't even hardly ask them, what being able to answer them. So we go out into the world, almost all of us, and we're trying so hard to find a way to make it work. And this, we do this over incarnations and incarnations, don't we? We develop all these different abilities. You know, the ability to get along in school, the ability to sing, the ability to get along with people, whatever it might be. And all of it is this inner pulse within us toward ever-expanding awareness, which will never be satisfied until it becomes infinite. And also just using our minds to try to figure out what's trying to happen here. And we develop, all of us, this certain power to have some mastery over our lives. We wouldn't be in this room looking at this teaching unless we did. I've been involved, I'm just going to mention local politics for just a minute here, partly because I want to tell you how to vote. Really, literally, just a few of you. This isn't the national campaign, I'm not even going to go there. Those of you who are Mountain View residents, there's a rent control measure on the ballot. It's ballot V, those of you who are Mountain View residents. It's only local. But I want to tell you this, because this was interesting. I was talking to a friend last night who turns out that he's not only a renter, he's a landlord, and he didn't know which way to vote. So I was trying to persuade him to vote the way I think he should, which is in favor of it. And he was giving me extremely cogent reasons why rent control is a terrible idea. Which I have no answer to that. I don't believe in the government trying to run our lives. I don't think morality can be legislated. I think you make a million rules and people are going to still get what they can if they can. It's just, it's not my world. But I said to him, I got into the rent control out of pure self-interest because our community is rented and the rates keep going up and I want to pay less rent. Just, I'm out there. I'm just like everyone else. This works for me and I want it. I'm just like all the other people grabbing for their own. So I started there. But I discovered what was happening is that this is a movement largely motivated by the Spanish-speaking community, at least that's where it started, and the Spanish-speaking community, because of their the cycle they're in with immigrating into this country and finding their way, you know, they've been they haven't had their own power, and this movement has largely been that group of people standing up and discovering. And working, and I have to say, because I've seen it from the inside, very honorably, extremely honorably and intelligently, to follow the system to make it work and change their own status. And I said, you know, in all the incredible moral confusion of our society, I realize this is one strand I want to support. Good people doing an honorable thing in a noble way. And I finally said to him, I don't know if it's in your best interest or mine, but it's in the best interest of these people to get a victory. And I realized, I mean, I'm telling you all this story because I want you to vote yes on Measure V. Yes on Measure V. Si se puedo, we can do it. That's what we're saying. But anyway, I'm also realizing how very complicated it is to know which way is forward. And because all the arguments against rent control, I can make them extremely well. I can debate either side of it. But it's not always clear cut, which is the way forward. And it's not always easy for us to see, because we're so engaged in our own, you know, I have a young child, I want to raise the child. You know, I have a lot of love to give. I want somebody to love. I've always wanted to be a mother. I want to be able to get pregnant. Whatever it might be, I have all this music in me. Doesn't anybody want to hear it? Whatever it might be, we have all these inner impulses, and it's just not that easy to know which way is correct. And I was born into a good family. But I really wanted to know why the Jews didn't think Jesus was the Messiah. And my father had no idea. Absolutely none. So we have to keep looking for where are we going to find guidance. And when I first came onto the spiritual path, when I was in my late teens, there was so much. I mean, I recognized it literally almost instantly. I went the first book, which was a few years before I saw Swami Kriyananda. It was just like, oh, this is it. I know this. I know this story, and this is what I've been looking for. But there was so much still that it's taken me all the rest of my life even to learn the tiny bit that I feel I know. But what happened was, oh, there is a place where someone does know. And that became the touchstone and has been the touchstone ever since. There is an unchanging reality of absolute wisdom. And even more powerfully, it's not a dogma. It's not a this is what you must do. Rent control is good. Rent control is bad. Immigrants should be supported. Immigrants should be kicked out. You know, this. People are always trying to just on the level at which who knows. Because what's forward for one person is backwards for another. In the course of this little political cycle, because I really wanted to help, I volunteered and I got some what they call walking lists. And I went around, you can hear by my tone of voice, and I went around and I started knocking on doors. And, you know, the first time I did it, I actually thought I would die of boredom. It was just like, this is terminally dull for me. Nobody answers their door, so I hardly even talk to anyone. I'm just leaving literature. But it was just like, this isn't my world anymore. you know, I did this when I was 16. It's just like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. But I go to the meetings for the tenants' coalition. But seriously, I could see how exhilarating it was for so many of these people to stand up for what they needed and go knock on a door. So what is the thread here? The thread is that which will help us to gain inner power and realize who and what we really are. And this world is given to us to participate in. There's a few people who actually are hermits, who actually do pure sadhana with very little involvement in the world, but it's a different stage of evolution than we're in. We have to interact. We have to want children and then have our hearts broken as we try to raise them and to acquire a comfortable home and all of the things that we have to do. What we have to understand, though, is God doesn't really care about any of that. So when we, you know, seek and pray for this thing, and we read a passage like that in the Bible and think it's going to come to us merely because it looks like a good thing to me, we have to also have that growing awareness of God's presence within us. And that growing awareness is really quite different than just being pleased. This is a distinction I've come to appreciate. Sometimes we feel really happy and really like God is really taking care of us because we're so pleased by what is happening. But to have that exact same feeling of happiness and that God is taking care of us when nothing that's going on pleases us, when all the people around us or all the circumstances around us, because what is the unifying thread? That's the question. And what I saw when I first began to understand self-realization is self-realization. That's the unifying thread. I myself, without even knowing it, I'm wrapped and bound and held and confined and limited by things I don't even know are there. And so I keep trying to, you know, untie it, but I don't even know what's tethering me. But there is this ever-growing awareness of God's presence in us that it makes life the only thing I can say is a very different experience. Nothing is really quite what it seems. And that which is good is pleasing, we think of it. That which is bad, you know, I've seen now so many souls, not hundreds, but I've seen enough souls go through the end of their life experience and face into things like my friend had to face, where it's just everything that would have pleased her, she wasn't going to get to have. And it forces you in the best possible way, if you continue to seek and you continue to knock and you keep demanding not what God can't give it you. My father could not give me the explanation. It just wasn't in his hands to give me. We think God can do anything, but God can't work against our own interests. You see, that's what he can't do. We demand that God work against our best interests. But I want this. Excuse me, don't you understand? I want this. You know, you can do a miracle. I want this. And with great love, and that's why prayer has to be integral to the growing awareness of God's presence within. With great love and with tears in his eyes, really. Master writes that in When I Am Only a Dream. He talks about how much he'll only a dream, meaning vanished from your earthly sight. Not a dream like faded away into nothing, but vanished from your earthly sight. He said, I will weep through your eyes and through mine as well. Because it's not like I remember I broke my arm once. I've had very few injuries in my life, but I was riding horses when I was 13 or so. And I fell off the horse and broke my arm. You know, you have these moments of time, this arm. I remember and just seeing my arm in a shape that seemed unlikely to be a good one, you know, just sort of very, very strange. And I was not particularly brave. And we called my mother, and I was out, and we went into the doctor who, he just spent all the time telling me how much it was going to hurt me when he had to set my arm. So by the time he just touched me, I was hysterical, literally. I was screaming. It didn't really hurt very much. The doctor scared me to death. But it just, you know, I was terrified, so I was screaming. And I remember it, through my upset, seeing my mother. I think she, I don't know whether she fainted or vomited, but I saw her just looking so, you know, far more distressed than I was even. Because she couldn't help me. You know, it was much worse for her. And even in the midst, as a 13-year-old, I remember thinking she was worse off than I was, like that. So if a human mother, if a human father can suffer like that for their offspring, can you imagine how the infinite father and the divine mother feels when they watch us insist, please, please, I need more rat poison. Don't you understand? I want more rat poison. Here, here's my cup. Fill it and let me drink it. And they say, no, I can't. No matter how much you weep and wail, there's no way I could give that to you. You're my beloved child. So what we're seeking for, what we're knocking and trying to get all the time, is the presence of God within us and the wisdom to hear why what he's not doing for us is just what we want. I remember I was in a circumstance once, Swamiji, I got a certain assignment, and I really did not want the assignment, super really did not want the assignment. And I was very upset, and someone tried to comfort me by saying, well, you don't have to do it. No, I said, the problem is I have to do it. If I could not do it, it would be okay. But I have to do it. And that's what happens to us in our lives. We want it to be different. There was that wonderful story you may have heard many times. It was Ganesha's son, Mukunda, he was called then. He's probably 35 or 40 now. He subsequently had a sister, but then he was an only child. We had this five-story mansion on a Broadway at Fillmore that we rented for about 10 years as an Ananda ashram. And the way it was made, five stories, maybe three or five, something like that. Gary, you were there, you know how many. Five, he's confirming, five stories. This huge wooden staircase up the middle, so that the whole house was an echo chamber. Wherever you talked in it, you could hear it all over with all these wooden walls and marble wooden floors and marble walls and things. And this child, a very powerful child, and he just got really bored early one morning. And he crawled out of his bed. He was about three. And he just stood. The family lived at the top floor. He stood right in the middle of the staircase. And his louded voice said, I want it to be morning! Just like that. Woke the entire house. You know, it's just like, I've had it with night. I'm bored. I want you all up. Everybody up. We need to have things happening here. I want it to be morning. I think about that a lot. You know, I want it to be morning. Well, honey, it isn't. You know, and what are we going to do about that? You know, that the real power of prayer, the real, unshakable, absolutely undeniable prayer is, Lord, give me the power to embrace your will. And we can have an opinion that this is a terrible idea, and we can have a hissy fit, as I did when Swami gave me that assignment I didn't want. But what was so frustrating to me was that I knew I'd have to adjust. And what I mean by that is, it's all right to have a reaction. But don't doubt even for a moment that Divine Mother has a better plan for you than you have for yourself. Even though the way may be long and winding and dark. And the little bird said, "How can I fly in this darkness?" And the night whispered, "Surrender to me. Peace awaits you in the unknown." Powerful words, aren't they? Peace awaits you in the unknown. Surrender to me, and your strength will be renewed. And after a time, I love that little phrase, after a time, how many long days and nights, how many incarnations did that represent? After a time, the tiny rebel surrendered. I love those two little words, tiny rebel. Do you ever feel like the tiny rebel? I often feel like the tiny rebel surrendered and found the night's counsel true. On the other side of the darkness, there's always the light. Always, always, always. God bless you.